The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Injuries sustained from job-related and auto accidents, as well as slip and falls, can last for your entire life. Being paid for your pain and suffering is not only deserved, but is necessary. And most importantly, it is your right. Let the law firm of Ross Russo Shahabian expertly, empathetically, and aggressively fight for what you deserve. My name is Tom Russo, partner at Ross Russo Shahabian. With over 40 years of combined experience, my partners and I have relentlessly and successfully fought for our clients' needs. Contact us at 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Do not be discouraged by your pain, and do not be discouraged by your experience with other personal injury attorneys. We are different. We are accessible to you 24 hours a day. We will keep you updated as to our progress and always fight for what you deserve. Again, our firm is Rosner Russo Shahabian, and our number is 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Stop hoping for a great settlement. Together, let us fight for one.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us to 103.9. You are listening to Accidentally Yours. I am your host today, David Yarone, from the law firm of Rosner Russo Shahabian. We are going to be talking today about personal injury. We are going to be talking today about that McDonald's hot coffee case that I know you have heard about. We are going to be talking about a lot of interesting things today. I am a litigator and a trial attorney with Rosner Russo Shahabian. Give me a call anytime. 516-376-0000. I'm coming to you live today. Very excited to introduce my guests. First up, Rosner Russo Shahabian's first name partner, Alan Rosner. How are you today, Alan?
Fantastic, David. Thank you for having me on the program. I am so excited to be here. And we've got some great material to cover. So just a little bit about Rosner Russo Shahabian. We are exclusively a plaintiff's personal injury law firm. Now, what that means, plaintiffs, we represent the people that are hurt. So one of the things that my partners and I saw in practice along the years is that there are attorneys that practice personal injury, but they'll dabble in other things. You know, you might have had a case where your lawyer was a personal injury lawyer, but he also does real estate closings on the side. And we just saw that as a distraction. Even worse, there's situations where you get a real estate lawyer who thinks they're going to get the next $1 million personal injury case, and they want to take it. And that always ends in a disaster. So the beauty of our practice is we only ever have and only ever will represent plaintiffs, people that are hurt. And you can count on that.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. You know, it's funny. I always think if I had a heart condition and I went to a cardiologist, if that cardiologist said I practice 85% cardiology and 15% dermatology, I am out that door. So I'm glad to hear it. 100% personal injury litigation. We also have today the managing partner of Rosner Russo Shahabian, Jonathan Shahabian. How are you today, Jonathan?
Great, David. Thank you for having me today. I'm extremely excited about today's topic. I can't tell you how pumped I am about it. So I want to give you a few background information facts about me. I was born and raised in Farmingdale, Daler. I currently live in Massapequa with my wonderful wife and my crazy lunatic of a dog, Loki, a golden Labrador. And I went to college in Binghamton University, where I got some experience in personal injury law, really fell in love with personal injury. I went on to graduate from Hofstra Law School. And I eventually partnered up with two of my favorite attorneys, in no particular order, Thomas Russo and Alan Rosner. Again, I'm very excited to be here today. Thank you for having me. There's probably no other controversial personal injury topic that gets me this fired up. So I'm ready to rock on this one.
No, it's great. I'm glad to hear it because people don't realize this case, this McDonald's hot coffee case, we're talking about a case that happened 20 years ago almost, and people are still talking about it. Jurors are talking about it, potential clients are talking about it, and plaintiffs are talking about it. You got to understand, this case happened so long ago, it's a part of pop culture. I don't know if our listeners can remember, but there was an episode of Seinfeld where Kramer is trying to walk into a movie theater, and he ends up putting a cup of hot coffee in between his pants, and he's walking in the movie theater, and he gets burned, and he decides to sue. There's been a lot of talk about the hot coffee McDonald's case over the years, and I'm really, really glad we're going to cover it today. Have either of you heard things about the McDonald's case, whenever you're in court or when you're signing up a new client, anything like that?
It's, you know, just like you and Jonathan are excited about this program, I can tell you a quick story. The first time I ever picked a jury, one of my mentors, great man, great lawyer, Sal Spano, he told me, look out, watch, they'll mention the McDonald's hot coffee case. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I thought he was joking. And believe it or not, first time I ever picked a jury, it came up. So just like you said, even though it was 20 years ago, it's still pervasive. It still has an impact on how these cases are viewed in society, even locally.
You know, it's interesting also because, you know, the people listening on the road, I'm sure a lot of them are driving around with a cup of coffee, with a hot cup of coffee right now. I mean, how many of our listeners have been at a restaurant? Maybe you go to the local diner, they pour the coffee too much in the cup, and all of a sudden it spills on your dress, it spills on your pants, and maybe you sustain some burns. So even our listeners know these things happen. Sometimes hot coffee does get spilled on you. It's a regular, everyday thing. Have you have any jurors or potential plaintiffs ever spoken to you about the McDonald's case, Jonathan?
It's a pet peeve of mine. I mean, it frustrates me so much when we're talking to jurors and their misconception of what happened in this case. It just creates such obstacles for us. And it's the cards are stacked against us, and it's something we have to explain and we have to educate. And it's part of the reason why I'm excited about this today, to shed some light and some clarity on this case and just get the word out.
Definitely. Absolutely. If anybody has heard of this case and wants to talk about their case or wants to talk about their personal injury case, they should give us a call anytime. Consultations are free. 516-376-0000. You can ask for any of us. We'd be happy to talk to you about this McDonald's hot coffee case. We'd be happy to talk about your personal injury case, whatever you'd like to talk about. So what I'd like to do today is talk about some of the myths that have gone on over the years. You know, sometimes a case happens, facts become legends, legends become myths, and things get so twisted that I made a list of some things that I thought were very interesting. I'd like to talk to you about them today, if that's okay with the both of you.
Of course. Dispelling some of the myths from the famous McDonald's hot coffee case is important because our clients, the people we represent, injured people, just like you out there, if you have a case or may have a case one day, you're up against this. You know, I remember seeing on the news, they called her case, a lawsuit lottery, you know, jackpot justice. And it was basically a smear campaign that was run by large organizations, large companies that were trying to push tort reform that limited our clients' rights to get justice in the courthouse. So having an opportunity to speak with you all out there and give you a little clarity as to what really happened, maybe change your perspective, maybe recolor your perspective a little bit. I relish this opportunity.
It's a really good point because especially when we're in the jury room, that's one of the few times we're able to actually have a conversation, a nice back and forth with jurors. So you're in the jury room, you're picking a jury, and a juror can say, hey, what about that McDonald's case? Does this lady want $150 billion like that lady that poured coffee on her? One of the things that gets me so upset is just how people today don't really know the truth about what happened. I mean, you know, Jonathan, you mentioned that this gets you a little fired up. Is there anything specifically about the McDonald's case that you've come into contact with that upsets you, that when you hear a juror or a potential client talk about?
I mean, obviously, we're going to get into some of the misconceptions today. I mean, it's a 1992 case, and the fact that the facts are still getting messed up today. If anything, they're getting messed up worse today than they used to. So, I want to get into that today, some of the myths and some of the misconceptions.
Absolutely. You know, one of the great things that our listeners should know is that everybody in this room today is a trial attorney. You know, you hear it a lot of times that so-and-so was hired as trial counsel. So-and-so was hired at the last stage right before the case goes to trial. We are trial attorneys. That means we can handle your case from beginning to end. We will not be shipping your case to somebody else right before trial. We will be taking it to the end. Do you think that as a trial attorney, either of you think that your perspective has changed because we are trial attorneys? Alan, what do you think about that?
I can't stress it enough. If you are someone involved in an accident, if you're either out there and you have a you have a case pending or you have one in the future. You need a lawyer who actually tries cases. And that's part of the foundation of how we operate, because seeing the case at the end, it helps guide you along the way. You see the pitfalls, you see the winds in the road, you know what to look for, you know what to be careful for, and it helps guide the case along the way. And also, having the ability to take a case to verdict helps you with settlement value along, you know, if it does come to that.
That's absolutely true. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Accidentally Yours. I'm your host, David Yaron, trial attorney with Rosner Russo Shahabian. If you have any questions, please give us a call, 516-376-0000. We'd love to talk to you about this case or your case. Consultations are free. Again, 516-376-0000. We'll see you after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Accidentally Yours. I am your host, David Yaron, attorney with Rosner Russo Shahabian. Call us anytime, 516-376-0000. We're talking today about that 1993 case. A woman gets terribly burned. Hot coffee spills all over her. You saw it in the news. You saw it on Seinfeld. People made fun of it. We're talking about it today because it really has colored the way that jurors see cases today when you're in the courthouse. When you're in a diner and something gets spilled on you, when you're walking down the street and you trip and fall and you say, you know what, it's not that bad. Listen, do yourself a favor. Give us a call. Let us make that determination for you. If you have a case, we will tell you. If you don't have a case, we'll do our best to help you out. You might be entitled to some medical benefits that you didn't know about. So please, give us a call, 516-376-0000. We're back. We're talking about the McDonald's coffee case with Jonathan Shahabian and Alan Rosner. So I want to get into some myths, if that's okay with you guys. Are you ready for them?
Let's do it.
All right. So the myth I hear all the time is, listen, the plaintiff wasn't even that hurt. It was just a regular cup of coffee that spilled on her. What's the big deal? You know, what do you have to say about that? Alan, what do you think about that?
This is a great place to start because what we do is personal injury, right? So what we do is driven by injury. If you out there, if you're involved in an accident, if you're not hurt, you don't have a personal injury case. But if unfortunately you are hurt, you do. And in this case, what most people don't know is the extent of Ms. Liebeck's injuries. Now, all of us, you know, we live on Long Island. We live in New York. We drink coffee. We drink tea. It gets cold. We have hot beverages. Every once in a while, you get burned. You burn your lip, or you spill a little on yourself, or you're at the diner, and the waiter or waitress knocks a cup over, and it gets into your lap, and maybe it hurts for a second. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe the biggest injury you have is now your pants are ruined. But the reality is you're not going to the hospital. You're not getting any treatment. This woman's injuries were horrific. All right? Now, to our listeners out there, if you're not driving, I challenge you, I dare you to Google the images of Stella Liebeck's injuries, because they've actually done some case studies on this, and immediately people's opinions of the case change when they see it, because they are horrific. Now, Ms. Liebeck spilled an entire cup of scalding coffee that we'll get to later about, you know, the coffee itself, into her lap, into her groin, onto her buttocks, into her thighs. And she sustained not first, not second, but third degree burns over 6% of her body. 6% of her body. The skin was burned so bad, it was charred so bad, that she was hospitalized for over a week. She had skin grafts, and she spent years in recovery. Now, pain, when it comes to pain, there's different levels, different kinds of injuries, but burn pains are by far the worst. They really are, because there's no walking it off. There's not much they can do for you. The treatment is complicated, and you know, the healing process is slow. And what this woman went through, the skin grafts, the painful debridement treatment to remove dead tissue, the 2 years spent in recovery, That tells a very different tale than you may have your preconceived notion that this was a minor burn, but it was far from minor. It was substantial, it was serious, and it was significant.
I agree. I mean, I knew that because I'm a personal injury attorney. Any injury attorney that doesn't know enough about this case really doesn't know what's going on. I mean, just so our listeners know, a skin graft is when they take skin from one part of your body and put it on another part of your body. So it's terrible. So I'm curious, how does that apply to lawsuits in New York, Jonathan? So we're talking about injuries. Are injuries that important to a personal injury case? How do you apply it?
First of all, the idea that she wasn't injured is crazy to me. It really is. Personal injury cases, you need to have a personal injury, right? You need to have an injury,
right?
Whether you're here in New York or in other states. So if you don't have one, sure, it's a frivolous case, right? But guess what? Those cases get thrown out of the court system pretty quickly. So if you have an injury, you're gonna be able to make it through the court system. The case is not gonna get dismissed. It's not a frivolous case by its very nature. But yet, so many people have called it a frivolous case. So many people have said that there was no injury in this case. So sure, in New York, you need to have an injury to have a personal injury case, okay? But you need a firm like Rosner, Russo, and Shahabian who knows about the medicine, who knows what medical experts to consult, and can get you through the court system and prove that you have these injuries. So yes, you need to have an injury here in New York for a personal injury lawsuit, and you certainly should be calling Rosner, Russo, and Shahabian for it.
Absolutely. I agree with that. You know, you even said through the court system. Sometimes you hear stories about these people. You're sitting in the car, you were at Thanksgiving dinner, and somebody said, you know, my lawsuit's still going on. We're on year five. We're on year six. What's going on? Have them give us a call. 516-376-0000. If you have a friend, if you yourself are stuck in the mud with the judicial system, give us a call. 516-376-0000. So absolutely, that's a really good point. You need personal injuries in an injury lawsuit. That's an incredible point. And hopefully we debunk that myth. If anybody has any questions, you can go on our website. You can send us questions. You can call in. But we're going to move on to the second, if it's okay with you. So the myth that I've heard is that, hey, this lady, not only does she spill this coffee on herself, but then she goes ahead and sues McDonald's for millions and millions of dollars. She wanted to get rich. You know, Jonathan, what do you think about that? The fact that everybody thinks that this lady out there sued for millions and millions of dollars.
You know, the unfortunate part about this is she didn't want to sue. Okay. Her children wrote a letter to McDonald's and said, look, check out the coffee machine in your particular restaurant, okay? It's too hot, all right? Do something about it. By the way, my mom, she's got $10,000 in past medical expenses and $10,000 in medical expenses that are coming. So can you reimburse her for her medical expenses, $20,000? McDonald's replied, they said, well, offer you $800, take it or leave it, okay? This was without a lawyer. Sure, she then goes and consults an attorney, and I don't blame her. But she tried to go around the court system. She tried to do what she felt was right and write a letter and take care of this between her and McDonald's. But they just didn't want to take care of it.
Right. You know, one of the things I always tell people is no matter what, consult a lawyer. What's the worst you do? You have a phone call. They can help you or they can't help you. We would love to help you if we can. But you definitely want to pick up the phone and give Rosner, Russo, Shahabian a call because hopefully we can help you out. Alan, what do you think about that? The fact that she asked for all this money, but it wasn't really true. How does that apply in New York? Do you ask for a certain amount of money in your cases?
So when it comes to plaintiff's personal injury, one of the first questions a lot of people have is, what is my case worth? Now, every case is different. If you have a case going on right now, the case is driven a lot by a lot of factors, from how the accident happened to what the initial injuries are and what the recovery was, right? So what I can tell you is we certainly don't rubber stamp a $1 million demand on every claim we have. That's not at all how it works. The way our cases are valued is it's a function of what the injuries are, right? So if someone has a more serious injury, we will ask, of course, for more money. But if somebody has a minor injury, we're not going to ask for $5 million, $10 million, $20 million. First off, a jury's not going to give it to them. An insurance company's not going to give it to them. And the judicial system has safeguards in place to prevent things like that from happening, really. There's plenty of safeguards. and the media has portrayed that there are all these runaway juries, but the reality of it is, first off, it's an outlier. That's why you hear about it. And also, there are appellate divisions and judges that make sure that that doesn't happen, you know?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things you mentioned that was very important was that, and Jonathan mentioned it as well, you know, this plaintiff, Ms. Liebeck, she tried to do it on her own. You know, a lot of plaintiffs, they end up saying, you know what, I'll deal with the insurance company on my own. I'll call the other people. I'll figure it out. I think I have a good case. I'll call Macy's. But you know what? Don't evaluate whether or not you have a good case. You might have an amazing case, and you just don't know it. Give us a call. We'd be happy to explain to you what you need to do. And if we can help, we'd love to help. 516-376-0000. You're listening to Accidentally Yours. I'm your host today, David Yaron, attorney with Rosner Russo Shahabian. We'll talk to you right after this break.
Injuries sustained from job-related and auto accidents, as well as slip and falls, can last for your entire life. Being paid for your pain and suffering is not only deserved, but is necessary. And most importantly, it is your right. Let the law firm of Rosner Russo Shahabian expertly, empathetically, and aggressively fight for what you deserve. My name is Tom Russo, partner at Rosner Russo Shahabian. With over 40 years of combined experience, my partners and I have relentlessly and successfully fought for our clients' needs. Contact us at 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Do not be discouraged by your pain, and do not be discouraged by your experience with other personal injury attorneys. We are different. We are accessible to you 24 hours a day. We will keep you updated as to our progress and always fight for what you deserve. Again, our firm is Rosner Russo Shahabian, and our number is 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Stop hoping for a great settlement. Together, let us fight for one.
Thank you. All right, thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We are back at Accidentally Yours 103.9. We are talking with Jonathan Shahabian and Alan Rosner about that crazy hot coffee case from 20 years ago. We're going through some of the top myths. We are a personal injury firm. Give us a call, 516-376-0000. If you think you have a case and you want to talk to an attorney, get on the phone with us. Consultations are completely free, and we'd love to talk to you about it. So we're talking about the hot coffee case. We're going through some of the myths. I want to go through another myth that I've heard over the years, okay? Here's a myth I've heard. Look, McDonald's was basically punished for serving a regular or a hot cup of coffee. What's the big deal here? Everybody serves coffee. Why are you punishing McDonald's? You know, Alan, what do you think about that myth?
David, that's one of the major misconceptions about this case. This was not a regular hot cup of coffee. If you're out there right now and you've got a coffee on you and you can take a sip without burning yourself, you know, that's how a cup of coffee should be served. That's how, you know, that's a safe cup of coffee. The problem in this case is that McDonald's was selling coffee that was not fit for human consumption. There were numerous experts at the trial, experts from the Chicago Burn Institute. Even McDonald's own witnesses testified that the coffee at the temperature served was undrinkable, that the coffee was served 180 to 190 degrees Fahrenheit, and at that temperature, within a second or 2 seconds of contact with skin, it'll burn you so bad that you can sustain injuries like poor Ms. Liebeck did. You know, I'm reminded of a story that my dog Matisse knocked over a hot cup of coffee the other day. And I cleaned it up, and within a few seconds, I could touch it without burning myself. But coffee as hot as it was that McDonald's was serving, that led to over 700 prior complaints of burns, wasn't made for people to drink. It was too hot. And the reality is McDonald's didn't have a very good explanation as to why they were serving it that hot. They threw out a few reasons. One, they thought the consumer didn't drink the coffee until a few minutes later. But the reality is that the corporation, McDonald's, required their franchises to serve it this hot. And that is why McDonald's was punished. Not because the coffee was hot. It's because the coffee was way too hot undrinkable. They knew about it. Almost 1,000 prior known complaints had been made, and they continued to do it anyway. And on top of it, at trial, the callousness of the employees from witness is really why McDonald's was punished here. You know, you got to keep in mind, McDonald's is a multi-billion dollar corporation. So for them, 700 complaints isn't a lot. 700 burned people isn't a lot to them when they're serving millions of cups of coffee a day. But the jury looked at it and said, that's 700 people. 700 people that were burned. And McDonald's at the trial, they had no intention of changing their habits. They said it. They got up there. Their witnesses took the stand. They said that it was an insignificant amount of people. Now, if you get burned by a cup of coffee, that's 180, 190 degrees. First off, that's going to be significant to you. I can guarantee it. And the fact that a corporation would say that that's insignificant to them, that is really why McDonald's was punished in this case.
Sure. Just out of curiosity, you know, when you say punished in this case, what does that mean in terms of, you know, what happened? How was McDonald's punished in this case?
Well, they were punished by an assessment of punitive damages. And punitive, you know what, Jonathan, I'm going to kick this over to you, Jonathan. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about punitive damages and how they operate here in New York?
Thanks, Alan. I mean, punitive damages are rare. You don't see them, but you do see them in the egregious cases. And this was an egregious case. So look, there's nothing that the judge could have done to order McDonald's to lower the temperature of their coffee, right? So the judge is left, you know, with a couple of different options in that trial, right? And he's going to allow compensation for Ms. Liebach's injuries, right? Regular old damages. And then we got the other type of damages, the punitive damages, the damages that are meant to punish, right? Why? Why do we have this? Well, how are you going to get McDonald's to change?
Right.
How do you get them to change? You get them to change by hitting them where it hurts, and that's money. Because money talks, and money's going to get McDonald's to change. And they did. So we're fortunate that we have this area of the law. I hope it never goes away. But when we have egregious cases, there's this avenue to pursue. It's punitive damages. That's to punish the big corporations, to make changes, to make their company safe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know at Rosner Russo Shahabian, we've had a couple of cases where we've had to seek punitive damages where we know that a defendant is basically doing the same thing over and over and over. You know, Alan, have you had cases with punitive damage as a part of it?
Absolutely. And there's one that we've been working on that it resolved recently for a very, very fair number. We're always happy to get a great result for one of our clients. But it was a situation where someone was involved in a car accident. And the defendant, the person we were suing, had a horrendous history of accidents, of speeding, and in this case, was driving over 80 miles an hour in a 30-mile residential zone while using his cell phone and hit my client head-on. That is a situation where you have to do something to change the behavior of the person. If the criminal courts aren't going to intervene, you have to do something. And it has to be proportionate to the wealth of the defendant. That's a big part of the punitive damages in this case. McDonald's, really, they should have been hit with a much higher punitive damages award. And the punitive damages aren't a function of what Ms. Liebach's injuries are. It's a function of their wealth. McDonald's they were making $75 million a day. So to get them to change their behavior, the jury tried to award a number they thought would accomplish that, and it shook out to about 2 cups of coffee a day, the sales that McDonald's gets.
That's a really interesting point. I'm glad you brought it up because it shows that these punitive damages that Jonathan spoke about, it's not just for the big corporations. If you get somebody that's traveling and barreling down the road and doing something wrong, you can seek punitive damages if you need to. So thank you for that. We're going to move on to another myth. All right, look. Whatever about this coffee spilling, it doesn't really matter because this lady was driving down the highway, left lane, speeding lane, driving out of control, going 80 miles an hour when she spilled that coffee. Jonathan, what do you think about that?
This myth makes me crazy. It does. You know, the idea that Ms. Liebach is driving on the highway, performing some sort of circus act where she's juggling her coffee, her creamer, and her sugar at the same time, it blows my mind. So what really happened here is she's not driving. She's a passenger in a car. Her grandson's driving the car through the drive-thru. They get their meal at McDonald's, okay? And they drive into the parking lot and park their car. I don't know about you guys, but I do that sometimes too. I like to eat alone. So I'll go ahead and I'll drive. I'll pull over in the parking lot. I'll have my meal by myself. Okay, that's what they were doing here. Okay, they pulled over to have their meal in the parking lot. She takes her coffee. She puts it between her legs. Okay, she takes off the top and she puts in her creamer and sugar. Now look, should she have put it between her legs? Probably not. But guess what? The jury, they decided that she was 20% at fault in this case, meaning they recognized, look, Ms. Liebach, you shouldn't have put the coffee between your legs, okay? So they did recognize that she was 20% at fault. But the idea that she was driving and juggling this coffee is just ridiculous.
No, it's terrible. And, you know, to go on that point, you know, Alan, you know, back in Liebach's case, basically, you know, they said it was 20% her fault, 80% McDonald's fault. Can you do things like that in New York as well?
Of course. We have a concept called comparative negligence. And also, for the record, now Jonathan's wife knows why the keto diet isn't working, because he's sneaking Wendy's in parking lots alone. So I'm sure they're going to have a conversation about that tonight.
Very good, Alan.
But back to comparative negligence. That's something we're up against. And when in Ms. Liebach's case, she didn't have cup holders, too. And that's something that the media doesn't tell you. All right. Now, that wasn't McDonald's fault. Still, I will say this to all of our listeners, you out there. Ms. Liebach was comparatively negligent. And when I'm picking a jury and when I'm trying a case, if it is true, I will tell a jury that my client was also partially at fault for the accident. That's the way the law works here in New York. It isn't all or nothing. All right. We're not all the safest drivers. And unfortunately, sometimes there are accidents. And if you take your eyes off the road for a split second, but a defendant goes through a stop sign, there's a possibility that a jury could find you partially responsible for the accident. Now, having said that, something you got to keep in mind is we're up against a wall. We're up against this confirmation bias that all plaintiffs are at fault for their own accidents. So that's something we deal with, and we take it head on.
You're listening to Accidentally Yours with Rosner Russo Shahabian. This is David Yaron. Trial attorneys in this room only. Please stay tuned after for our final segment on that crazy hot coffee McDonald's case. You're coming back to Accidentally Yours. I am your host, David Yaron, with Rosner Russo Shahabian. We are a personal injury firm. We are talking today about that crazy McDonald's case. The one 20 years ago, a lady is barreling down the road. She's spilling coffee everywhere and she's hurting herself. So we're here to talk about it today. If you have any questions about this case or your potential personal injury case, give us a call, 516-376-0000. All right, I want to talk about the biggest myth of them all, the one that got all the headlines, and I'm going to ask you, Alan. Look, this lady, she got hundreds of millions of dollars, right? She set herself up, her kids up, her family up. She got all this money. She's a wealthy lady, right?
Nonsense, David. Absolute nonsense. And if the award was $100,000, we wouldn't be talking about the case 20 years later. The reality is the jury did award $2.9 million to Ms. Liebach. All right, now let's break that down a little bit. $200,000 were for Ms. Liebach's injuries, okay? And now that $200,000, that's what a jury awarded her. So if you have your own case and if you go to trial, the judge isn't giving you that award. Your attorney's not giving it to you. The defense attorney's not giving it to you. The jurors are the ones who decided what was fair and reasonable for what this woman went through. And if you see those pictures, $200,000 even seems light. And that number was reduced, actually, the concept of comparative negligence. The jury did find that Ms. Liebach did contribute to her accident. So they found her 20% responsible for her accident. They found McDonald's 80% because they were selling coffee not fit for human consumption. But they reduced that award to $160,000. The punitive damages is what gets all the headlines. That was $2.7 million. She didn't get that. That award was reduced by a judge. Ultimately, the award was lowered to $480,000, $500,000, something along those lines. And McDonald's appealed. The case wound up settling out of court for some undisclosed number because of confidentiality agreements for a number south of $500,000. So she didn't get hundreds of millions of dollars. That is a myth.
Right. So all these newspaper articles and songs and pop culture references, it didn't even happen. She didn't even make $1 million. So, you know, my question would be to Jonathan, how does that come to pass in New York? How does a jury come up with a number at a case? You know, do you have to tell the jury what a case should settle or what a verdict should be? How do you go about that?
It's always a difficult question for jurors, and to talk to them about money it's a sensitive issue, right? Because just money's sensitive, and when you're asking for money, especially when you're asking for millions of dollars, it can be an awkward or sensitive subject for them. But you absolutely have to ask them, make recommendations to the jury. Look, juries are they get it right, and our system's not perfect, but I'm so thankful that we do have jurors to serve. We're not talking about politicians deciding these cases. We're not talking about attorneys deciding these cases. We're talking about our friends, our families, our coworkers, you know, just our neighbors. Regular people sit on the jury. Again, you know, it's not a perfect system, but really is the best one out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, you make a fantastic point. You know, all of our listeners out there in Suffolk County, if you are listening and you've served on a jury before, or you get that notice and you show up, we thank you. You know, we're a team of trial lawyers, and without you, we couldn't do our job. Without you, we couldn't get our clients justice, because the jury system, which is the bedrock of the civil justice system, doesn't work if jurors don't show up. So every time you show up, we are so grateful that you Absolutely. Take that time to be there.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I tell my juries as soon as I meet them is, don't leave common sense at the door. You know, one of the reasons why this is so great and so important is I want you to look at my client. I want you to look at the plaintiff. Do you think they're lying? Do you think they're telling the truth? You're allowed as a juror to say, hey, you know what? I think she's telling the truth about her pain. I think every morning she wakes up and she can't get out of bed, takes her a few minutes to warm up the back. Everybody out there listening knows, you ever fall, it takes a while to feel better. Unfortunately, some people never feel better. So it's great that we're able to talk to our jurors and our plaintiffs like that. Now, let me ask you both. You've had a lot of intakes over the past couple of weeks, you know, all the weather that's been coming in. Have you found that people mention things like, hey, how much is my case worth? Do they ask you questions like that right out of the bat?
Yeah, I get it more often than I'd like. The fact of the matter is, I tell them all the time, I say, look, I'm not doing you any service by throwing a number out there just for throwing a number out there. Sure, I can, but I won't. There's not enough facts. We're going to put your case into litigation, right? Into the court system, and we're going to do depositions, and we're going to uncover facts. And those facts are going to create value on your case. And I need to see how your injuries are going to develop, because today you feel one way, but how are you going to feel 2 months from now or 3 months from now? So, sure, I'm asked that question all the time, but unfortunately, I don't like giving an answer there for the very reason of you can't, because you don't know what that case is going to look like. And any attorney who's going to tell you what that case is worth out of the gate is not doing you anything good.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't realize that there's no guidebook that says, hey, a broken arm is worth $5,000 and a broken hip is worth $10,000. It doesn't work like that. Alan, how have you come across people, potential clients, or just people on the street that want to know, hey, what's my case worth?
You know, it's a case-by-case basis, and it's about developing trust with your clients. You know, just like John said, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know how the case is going to develop. Sometimes things go well. Sometimes discovery unveils additional facts that increase the value. Sometimes they decrease the value. But the real challenge is explaining value to a jury, actually. And especially with the backdrop of cases like this hot coffee case, jurors show up there with this bias already against us. You know, if the first thing that a juror tells me is there are too many lawsuits and they're frivolous, you know, I know what I'm up against. I know what my client is up against. You know, because of cases like the McDonald's case, the way it's been spun in the media, jurors have this preconceived notion that all these cases are frivolous. So how do I address that? I am always honest with the jury. I'm always honest with my clients. I manage their expectations from the start. I don't tell them they have a million-dollar case, promise them the sun, the moon, and the stars when it's not true, because that's only going to create issues. And I don't tell a jury I have a million-dollar case when I don't have one because of cases like this McDonald's case. So we have to tread carefully. John's absolutely right. It's a sensitive subject, asking people for money, but it's the only system we have. So right. We operate within the confines of a civil justice system and money, and we do the best we can to show that our case is different, that it's not one of those frivolous cases, if someone has that preconceived notion walking into a jury selection.
Sure. You know, it's great that you mention all those things. If any of our listeners are driving around and it's hard to turn your head to even check your rearview mirror, I invite you, please stop by our office. We're local. We're in Farmingdale. 398 Conklin Street in Farmingdale, right around the corner. Please stop by. We'd love to talk to you. We'd love to help you. And most importantly, we'd love to educate you on what your options are. You know, Jonathan, one quick question I always get is, why do we ask for money? Why are we out there asking jurors for money? It's such a dirty word. Why are we asking for it?
What else are we going to ask for, David? You know, it's like I said before, we can't have a judge order somebody to change their behavior, right?
Yeah.
So the only way we have to show somebody, you know, things have to change is money. But putting that aside, you have somebody who's a victim and who's injured, and they need to be compensated for those injuries. They need to be made whole, right? They were injured. They were had, you know, good health, normal life, and then this accident or incident happened, and their life has been changed forever. We got to fix that, and we fix that by compensating them.
Absolutely. So I want to thank my guests today, Jonathan Chahabian and Alan Rosner. I had a lot of fun today. We learned a lot. I hope our listeners learned a lot, and I invite our listeners to please give us a call at 516-376-0000. We are always available. Our cell phones are on our business cards, so please, 516-376-0000. Take care.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.